Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner, and I'm a little ashamed. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. I keep introducing this as the place where we're entrepreneurs, where ambitious upstart can feel that they've got a home. And still, I remember going on Facebook soon after COVID-19 hit and seeing one of my past guests was making hand sanitizer at some brewery, I guess, and selling it. And I thought, oh, this is just a little too slimy. He's trying to like profit off of this thing. What does he know about sanitizer? What's he doing? And then I couldn't find sanitizer. And it made me very uncomfortable when we'd go out. I remember on one of my runs, I touched something and I must have been listening to some podcast about COVID-19. Just touching something on my run made me think, I can't let this hand touch my face. I can't let this hand touch my shirt. I just was so paranoid because I couldn't find hand sanitizer to clean it off, to reassure me. And frankly, because I was a little paranoid. And I started to realize, you know what? These people who are filling in the gaps where the Purells of the world couldn't provide hand sanitizers for us, they're not profiteers. They're doing the right thing. They're entrepreneurs who are really helping. And one of my other guests who created face masks and was on Twitter saying, I could get your company face masks. I thought the same thing about him. I said, he's now profiting. He went from creating t-shirts and hoodies to now face masks. What's he doing? And then I saw that my wife was going into work and talking to other people who are also going into work in San Francisco, talking about how they're going to get face masks for their people and how tough it is. And what do they do to get a face mask that looks good and is functional and it's the type of thing that people will wear? And I realized these entrepreneurs are helping businesses get back to not normal, but get back to business, helping people feel reassured and keeping people safe. And I was wrong to criticize them, if only in my head. I didn't go on Twitter or go on a rant. I didn't message them, but I wasn't picking up on it. And I also recognize that when there is change, there is huge opportunity. And we can't be paralyzed by it. We have to, as entrepreneurs, do our job, which is to say, what's the pain in the world? And that is what we need to go in and fill. And one of the reasons why I understand this is because years ago, I interviewed an entrepreneur named Robbie Berthium, who at 14 years old started a business, who soon after that started a few businesses, including one business to help people who are just getting married. And one of the lessons that stuck with me from my interview with him back in 2009 was he said, Andrew, at pivotal changes in people's lives, they get married, they graduate, they buy their first home. These are the points where they're willing to consider alternatives, where they're willing to deal with a new business instead of going back to their old habits. And we've got a world that's changing, and we have to recognize that people are in need of us and that they're willing to consider us instead of going into their old habits. And so that's why I am so glad that Robbie has stayed in touch with me and has told me what he's been up to and has said to me, you know, Andrew, I'm also creating hand sanitizer and face masks and PPE and testing and medical kits, which now I'm noticing in my entrepreneurial groups. One of the things I love about San Francisco is even when you don't get to meet people in person, you get to stay in touch with them remotely. I'm seeing the entrepreneurial group that I'm in. They're talking about, how do we test our people? How do we test ourselves? How do we test our family? Anyway, he's got testing kits and he's providing them to medical and essential businesses. And I invited him here to talk about how he figured out that he should be jumping in on this. Did he feel the guilt that people like me might have made him feel? And what's he doing to grow his business right now? And we're going to talk about it thanks to two phenomenal sponsors. Oh, I should say the name of his company. It's called Berthium & Company, after his last name. And the two sponsors who are making this interview happen, the first is the next podcast you should be listening to once my podcast is over. It's called Traffic Secrets. It's with Russell Brunson, the creator of ClickFunnels, giving you secrets. He calls them secrets. He's giving you the techniques that have worked for him and his customers for years. He's giving it to you in his podcast. And oh, by the way, he's super fun to listen to because he's such a good storyteller. You should listen to Traffic Secrets. And the second sponsor is TopTal, the company you go to when you're hiring developers. And I'll talk about those later. Robbie, good to have you here.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Did you feel any of the guilt that I was feeling in my, that people like me might have made you feel when you got into the space?
Yeah, I thought about it. I mean, I felt guilt, frankly. I was watching COVID since January and paying attention to the news and felt like it was going to be a big thing and prepared myself and my family and, you know, had masks and gloves. And I remember, you know, fairly early on wearing masks to the grocery store and you know, having somebody from Trader Joe's give me a hard time for wearing the mask because I should have donated it, saying I should have donated it to a hospital that needed it. Why am I wearing this mask? You know, and I said, actually, I gave, you know, what I had to my grandparents, you know, and I'm trying to protect my family. But there's a lot of judgment out there in a lot of different ways, wearing masks, not wearing masks, social distancing, getting involved.
How early did you get into
selling
this
stuff? How what?
How early did you say the world is changing? COVID-19 is a thing.
Yeah, I mean, really, you know, mid-February was when I really took it seriously. And then, you know, definitely mid-March is when things obviously, you know, started to shut down. And that's right at that time is when, you know, I had my first introduction to a hand sanitizer factory. It was the e-cig factory, now creating hand sanitizer.
Wait. I had a friend. They make electronic cigarettes and they said, we're getting into making hand sanitizers. And they reached out to you.
They make the liquids, and then they went through the FDA, got certified for hand sanitizer, and had all the right documentation and packaging and inventory and that kind of thing. And so I looked at it and tried to sell. We reached out to some contacts and started to, you know, get the wheels turning.
Why did he come to you? I know you as the guy who does marketing. I know you as the guy who builds businesses.
He came to me because he converted his factory from an e-cig factory, and he doesn't know what he's doing. And you know, he's
he made
just
the
trying
hand
to get-
sanitizer. He came to you saying, "Can you help me figure out who's going to buy this? Can you help me sell it?
Can you help me find buyers?" Exactly.
Got it. And that's what you're good. What did you do at, or what do you still do at Bull and Beard?
It's connect agencies and brands on a commission basis. So, you know, lead those searches. So connecting buyer and seller as a broker, just like I'm doing with the medical supplies business. It's just now it's products and, you know, it's products that I have to learn quite a bit about. And I've had to get to know, you know, different things about, you know, the industry and how things work. But a lot of it has been, you know, really relationships with a variety of suppliers and relationships with a variety of connectors, gatekeepers, matchmakers.
Can
that
you
have
give me
brought
an example?
Me a good amount of
Beard, this is your agency that you've run for what, 7 years now?
Yeah,
Bull and Beard. Well, give me an example of the kind of the kind of connection that a Bull and Beard you made.
So Bull and Beard, a good example might be Fujitsu. We've connected Fujitsu with three or four agencies. So for example, a PR agency.
Agencies that do what?
A PR agency for, okay, you know, a 20-25K a month retainer, a creative agency for banner ads and creative work, a SEO digital marketing agency for that side of the house. So specialize in a variety of different areas.
Why do they need you? Why can't they just go on Google, ask their friends, find what they're looking for? Why do they need to give you a commission every time they make a check to an agency that you introduce them to?
Yeah, really, because we have a collective of vetted and vouched for agencies where we've done a 1 hour interview, we've done reference checks, we've done a work review, we've set up a matchmaking agreement. So we reduce risk, and risk is the biggest, you know, B2B purchasing decision making factor. And it's the same thing with Berthoum & Co. and medical supplies. Risk is the biggest factor. And especially when you see all this negative press about, you know, mask, people selling masks for $4 or $5 and, you know, ripping off people, and it gives you a bad taste in your mouth. And that's definitely what kind of pushed me away from Berthoum & Co. in the beginning, that perception of people looking at me like just this opportunist.
Right.
But I felt like there was a way to do it without the greed. And frankly, you know, I think with the way that I sell things and the margins that I sell them at, I can sleep at night. I know that I'm not ripping people off. I know that my margins are thin. And then I know that I'm helping other people because there's inevitably commissions to people that connected me with the buyer, the suppliers. And then I'm donating 15% back to PPE for frontline healthcare workers. So I've already been able to make donations and, you know, get the joy of doing that out of this effort.
All right. So electronic cigarette maker starts to make hand sanitizer, comes to you and says, I know how to make it now. I'm making it. I need help selling it. And you looked at it and you didn't work with them. Why not?
Yeah, I didn't work with them because their product was just the way that their packaging was set up. A few different reasons. It just wasn't a good fit.
What do you mean? What's wrong with the packaging?
It's because it's the e-cig liquid. I got some samples essentially, and it's hard for me to open it and use it myself. And if I can't use it myself, I mean, I'm not going to sell it. If I don't believe in it, I mean, I've got to believe in it. And that's
what's
really
wrong
the
with
big thing.
Oh, because it's a liquid, not a gel?
Yeah, it's not because it's liquid. It's because of the packaging itself. It's like really hard to get the lid off, and then it's an awkward looking kind of squirt. It doesn't work. It's not the right packaging. And so I've actually stayed away from smaller increments of hand sanitizer. I sell more by the gallon and by the case and by the pallet. and have had, you know, large companies and gas stations and, you know, all kinds of people, you know, have interest in that and done quite a bit of sales on the hand sanitizer side. But I'm working now primarily with a chemical company that started creating hand sanitizer as a result of COVID. So it's interesting how many, there's a lot of companies, you know, my suppliers that are, you know, Chinese products that are shipped into the US and available in warehouses. And I use that because they're, you know, short, the lead time is going to be short. And then I work with as many US suppliers as I can. So for social distancing decals or face shields or stuff like that, if I can get it in America, I will. The problem is so much is made in China that, you know, you really, if you need product to protect your employees or your, you know, frontline healthcare workers, you've got to make concessions, you know, sometimes as far as what you're buying and where it comes from and how much you're paying.
Okay. So it didn't work out with them. What was then the next step that you took? If it wasn't the electronic cigarette company, what's the next step you took to say, I got to get
Yeah, the next step I took was I found an owner of a promotional products company that had also pivoted or was in the process of pivoting to really focus on COVID and had a lot of relationships, but a lot of experience, not necessarily in the medical supply space, but in the promotional product space, it's the same type of business. And so I linked up with him and he's been a great resource and friend and our friendships just kicked off with this. And he had a lot of supplier relationships lined up. And so I, you know, was ordering products and masks through him. And eventually I you know, developed my own suppliers and now he's been biased from some of mine.
He was masks was the first thing that he had?
Yeah, he was getting masks and you know, hand sanitizer and then, you know, basically I got better hand sanitizer. So now he gets hand sanitizer through me.
All right, but you know, he found a couple of places where he can get masks and hand sanitizers. It was on you now to do the second part of this, which is to find customers. How did you find customers?
Yeah. So really two things. I mean, number one is, you know, simple, post to Facebook and LinkedIn, pretty strong social followings, a lot of entrepreneurs and well-connected people. And
but you went to social media, to your LinkedIn and Facebook and said, I've got hand sanitizer and face masks. Do you know anyone who needs to buy them?
Oh yeah. I put it out there.
And that's how you got customers?
And I've gotten a lot of customers relationships from that and friends.
Did you get any hate? Did you get any negativity from that?
Honestly, no. No, I didn't get any hate, any DMs. I mean, I expected hate, but nothing. I mean, I think there was a comment when I think a picture I was wearing a mask, somebody was calling me out for that or I wasn't wearing it correctly or something, but that was before the Birth Human Co. So no, I haven't really gotten any hate from it. And
okay, and so then where did you what's the first customer that you got?
First customer I think was Curology.com, and then Liquid Web. I should know this, but off the top of my head,
Curology.com?
Curology.com.
Okay, this is sulfate-free hair product styling hair care. That's what they do. And they said, we want to sell this also.
Yeah, they wanted masks and the KN95s.
Not to sell.
For their people, for their employees, not to sell. I'm not really selling into, I am talking to some medical distributors, some of the bigger ones, multi-billion-dollar medical distributors that are looking at product, but most of it is for, you know, their employees, for their people.
That, I like see. Liquid, so it's not like people are buying example. It to resell. Yeah, Liquid Web. Liquid Web is a company that I used to use to host my website. Well, tell me about that.
Yeah, I've done a couple orders with them and they've you know, gotten 3-ply masks and provided a testimonial. They've got a pretty robust policy as far as masks and social distancing and I'm sure even testing kits. So they've been coming back and ordering more and been a good customer for us. So really it's just
because
about
the thing
keeping
is
their
that
employees.
Websites are counting on them to host. If they're not up, these businesses are down. If they need to have people maintain the hardware, right? Don't they have actual hardware?
Yep, essays. Right?
And so with actual hardware, you need people to go and touch the hardware to be in there. And if they're going to have their people go in there, they wanted to keep them safe. And so they came to you and they said, can you get masks for our people? Can you get what? Decals so that they know what's expected of them and what the rules are for safety, hand sanitizer. And so you got all that to them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And I get requests for different, you know, like automated hand sanitizers with stands and, you know, nitrile gloves, thermometers, infrared thermometers, you know, all different types of products. But now again, based on the network of suppliers, I'm able to send a few text messages and get pricing and MOQ, minimum order quantity, and all the details I need, documentation where, it's easy to find the solutions. And really the biggest thing is being as clear as possible. You know, people are oftentimes in a rush with, you know, wanting information and give me this fast, but you have to make sure that you give them the full documentation, the picture of the packaging, all that kind of stuff. Otherwise, you know, there could be surprises. Since you're working on a 50,000 or 150,000 or, you know, $150 million order, I'm working on 5 multi-million dollar orders for 3M masks. And, you know, there's a lot of risk involved. So you got to be really careful with what you say and what you represent and making sure that they've got the full picture and expectations that you can manage by.
Why can't you just set up an e-commerce site? Whenever you have a product listed on the product, say to Liquid Web, here, go to my site and you can see all the details, screenshots, whatever. If you have any questions, ask. Why not do it all online?
Yeah, we're working on an e-commerce site now. I've got a partner involved that's gonna help there, and you know, we'll charge retail pricing on the e-commerce site, so it's gonna be higher pricing and a little bit more. You know, probably do drop shipping, and I'll probably have inventory of some items as well. So that's definitely coming up here soon. The reason I like the brokering and you know, personal selling and bulk orders is, you know, if you do an order that's 6 figures, 7 figures, you know, the commission can be pretty lucrative in one deal versus the hassle of, you know, 30,000 orders via e-commerce to make the same amount of money. So that's really where, you know, I just gotta make sure that we're, you know, I'm investing in the brokering side right now the most, because it's where, you know, I think the most profit is, and then e-commerce is kind of phase two.
So you made
a lot of others, I think, is the opposite. I think a lot of others doing what I'm doing are selling masks, you know, via e-commerce or Shopify or WooCommerce, or doing that right off the bat, you know, but they're only making a few dollars per mask on 5 mask orders. And, you know, I'm selling 30,000 masks. I'm selling 50,000 masks. So I'm making a lot more money at once.
The hand sanitizer, I see you've got 1 ounce containers. Most people don't sell 1 ounce containers online. Those are little tiny little things that fit in the palm of your hand, right? In a fist, you can hide it. But you're not selling them individually. You're selling them in bulk.
Yeah. So everything has a minimum order quantity. Some things are 100, 300, 500, 1,000. Just depends on, you know, what the product is. Testing kits are not, you don't have to buy a ton of testing kits. It just depends on the supplier and their rules.
Wow. Can I just buy 1 testing kit from you or 5 test my family?
Yeah, we can make that happen. Yep.
Are you selling it that RNA way, or is that just like as a favor to a friend?
No, we do. If somebody wants to test it, you know, I had somebody reach out and say, hey, I'd love to get a test, or both the testing kits, test them out and then basically get them for my employees. We'll definitely make that happen. They're $26 and $29 for the testing kits.
That's
for
it.
RNA and antibody. And they can actually, I can get the price cheaper if it's a bulk order. If we're talking 100, 500,000 testing kits, we can get that closer to $20.
What's the RNA? What's the, and wait, this is for the testing kits. Then I mail them in somewhere and they tell me whether I'm negative or positive for it.
Yeah, I believe the RNA needs to be operated in a lab setting, so that's less of the stay at home, the at home kit, and then the antibody kit is the one that you can use at home, and it's going to be a little bit of a, I think it's like a finger prick, collects the blood to run the sample within 5 minutes.
And it tells me
minutes.
If I've had COVID-19.
If you have antibodies, exactly.
Wow. How accurate? How do you know if it's accurate? I've been seeing a lot of articles about how
accurate. Yeah, so we have all the documentation. Basically, with the RNA test, it's FDA approved and EAU approved. And then with the new antibody test, it's EAU approved and then FDA pending approval, but available for sale. So it's legal to sell it. And then all the tests and documentation, it's there. The success rates, all of that. I think it's, don't quote me on this, but I mean, it's definitely, it's supposed to be 95% or above, and it's definitely above that and exceeding other tests in the marketplace. A good price point. We felt it was the right testing kit to go with.
So can I see information about that on your site? When I go to your site and I see it's the Dicarta testing kit, all I get is a photo of it. I don't see much more info, right?
Yeah, that's where, I mean, basically started this thing 7-8 weeks ago and have scrambled together a website and FreshBooks and a business bank account and an LLC and, you know, everything needed to, and reseller certificates and relationships. And so I'm trying as quickly as I can to get things
running.
So
this is just you saying, I'm up and running as fast as possible.
Yeah.
And that's where we are right now in the world.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. All right. I'm with you on that. Let me take a moment, talk about my first sponsor, and then we'll get back in here and continue this interview. My first sponsor is, it's a podcast. Are you listening to podcasts a lot these days?
Me? No, I don't. I'm not an auditory learner kind of guy. So I just, I don't know. I like shows and stuff like that where there's video component, but with podcasts, it's hard for me to retain the information.
I'm so into I feel like there's some
sorry
people
to be a buzzkill. Being on podcasts, but no, it's hard to listen because I just don't. I can't seem to focus unless
so
I'm like reading
or
watching
something.
If you
go for a long drive, what do you listen to?
Music.
Music. I can't do that. Yeah. I can do it for a little bit, but not unless I'm. I need audio. I need words. I need people talking to me. I will go to sleep listening to words. I camped out in my backyard the night before last. I couldn't fall asleep well. I just put on, in that case, it wasn't a podcast. It was the Howard Stern Show. I was testing Sirius XM to see if I'm into it. I just turned it on. I listened to him do his show and boom, I was out in like 5 minutes. If I'm walking around my house, the speaker, the Echo speaker will be blasting some kind of podcast. I need it. I feel like there's some people who just need that for calm. I need to have talking around me. And I also just pick up on stuff well that way. There's some topics that I don't have the patience to sit and read a long form article on. I like there's very little COVID stuff that I read that I retained. It's more like listening to podcasts and then I just quit it. I said, I think I got enough. I don't need to listen to it all day long. Anyway,
yeah, overload.
The reason that I bring this up is because anyone who's out there who's a podcast fan, who's a podcast listener, should try a new podcast by my friend Russell Brunson. He's a longtime Mixergy listener, has been on Mixergy several times, and he's the guy who created ClickFunnels. It's a great way to create landing pages. He's done this now for years. He's done over $100 million a year in business, creating software that enables people to convert traffic into customers. And he said, you know what? I picked up quite a few things about how to get traffic over the years. I think I know how to do it for free, how to do it for paid. I think I know ways that work for my business and work for our customers' business. I'm going to create a podcast where I teach this. In fact, the first step was I'm going to create a book. And he wrote a great book called Traffic Secrets on it. He said, you know, some people are not going to sit and read the book unless they have a little bit more insight into this. And some people may never read the book. They just are more auditory listeners. So he decided he was going to create a podcast where he gave the secrets, where he told the stories, where he shared some of the insights that he has learned over the years about how to get traffic. If you're listening to me and you're looking for a new podcast, I urge you to check out Traffic Secrets. It's a podcast available on whatever podcast app you're listening to me on. If you've got an Echo speaker, a Google speaker, an Apple speaker, does anyone have Apple speakers? Whatever you've got, Sonos, earphones, iPhone, Android, go listen to that. Subscribe right now and have it download. You will love the storytelling that he uses. You'll love the specific tactics that he teaches. And frankly, if you don't love it, you got nothing to lose. If you do love it, this could be the new thing that helps you get more traffic to your business. Go get Traffic Secrets podcast right now. Traffic Secrets. How did you get the next batch of customers, or was it all social media for a few weeks?
Yeah, I mean, so basically run outbound campaigns, drip campaigns to procurement at hospitals and relevant target audience.
Meaning you got their email addresses and then you sent out messages to them.
Yep,
email
LinkedIn
messages.
Sales Navigator, email tools. Yep, exactly. Building out the campaign, the messaging, and then reaching out to the right people at procurement. So that resulted in conversations with Rite Aid and CVS and Walgreens and Ace Hardware.
For their people, not for reselling.
For their people, exactly. For
so
them
wait,
to,
tell
to
me
purchase.
About Sales Navigator. Sales Navigator is a LinkedIn tool. Did they give you email addresses of customers? They let you search for people based on job title and company, right?
You can search and source, and then you can get the emails with tools like Snovio, and there's a couple others that we use for actually finding the email addresses. But Snovio, so, like prospect.io, stuff like those.
Snovio.io. It's what they do is they automate outreach. Do they also collect email addresses for you?
I'm pretty sure they're the one that collects email addresses. I have some help on the outbound side.
And then who sends out the email messages for you?
So that's just automated through software. I'm trying to think. We switched from Woodpecker to a new platform here recently. But essentially, you know, that's been effective. But honestly, the social media, you know, friendships, relationships, you know, getting connected with gatekeepers, that's been far and away more active than you know, the outbound, just the snowball effect of these relationships. And
the way the outbound works is you do search for job titles that you think will be helpful at companies that you think would be a good customer. And then you get their email addresses, then you put it into something like Woodpecker, which is woodpecker.co. You write your first message, and then if you don't get, and then you send that out to all of them. If you don't get a response, it automatically will send a follow-up message, something like just making sure you saw this, bubbling this up to the top of your inbox, that type of thing. If they don't respond, maybe you just kill it off right there. If they do respond, a human being answers back and then starts a conversation that leads
exactly.
to sale.
Super That's easy. Might be 4 to 5 emails to 9 emails. You know, they say the more emails, the better as far
I've
as conversions
seen the data on it.
Ninth,
how many do you
know,
you'll get? But 9 emails without getting a response, you do that?
9 emails in this climate is hard. I think it's overselling in this economy. People are really averse to being sold to right now. So for me, it's more 4 or 5 emails with across the board with my different companies that 4 to 6 that I'm trying to kind of stay within, because beyond that, it's just too much.
And it's all pre-written.
I mean,
and then
it's all pre-written.
It goes out automatically.
It runs like a machine, goes out automatically. And usually I get 1 to 2 responses per day that, you know, are usually legitimate and lead to me being able to follow up and let them know about new products, new inventory, that type of thing. And then I've got the matchmakers, gatekeepers, you know, connected through social, through friends of friends. And with them, I'll pay a commission, you know, typically 15% if they bring a buyer. And, you know, if they bring a dental practice, one brought a dental practice that, you know, has 29 offices, well, they place an order for, you know, 6 figures and, you know, that commission's a really nice commission for somebody to make an intro.
For every $100,000 in sales.
$50,000 for 15% of 100,000 would be their commission of if it's 100,000 profit. So,
profit, 15% of the profit.
Yeah. 50% of profit.
Got
exactly.
It, because it's just
so oftentimes, I mean, to be realistic, you know, most of the time on the commission side, when it comes to the profit, I'm usually paying out about half to commissions and my donation to frontline healthcare workers, because I'm paying, you know, maybe 15% to a supplier commission, maybe 15 to 25% to the sales commission, and then 15% to donation to frontline healthcare workers. So I'm getting usually about half the profit. But, you know, that puts me in a position where, you know, I sleep better at night knowing that not only are our margins in, other people are being rewarded by bringing these opportunities, and they're bringing more, and they're incentivized to actively find more, to find more suppliers, to give me that attention, because they know that a lot of other companies are paying 5% commission. That's the max they'll go. And I'll be, hey, if you bring me $1 million order, I'll give you 25%. I'll give you 35%.
So if I reached out to all of my past guests, say, look, if you need any help getting masks or tests or whatever you need for your people, I got a guy who I interviewed. I'd be happy to make an introduction. I get 15% of the profits.
Yes. Yes. Wow. And if you get a bigger deal and you reach out and say, hey, I've got an order for 500,000 masks or, you know, whatever it is, then I'm going to come back to you and say, okay, what about, you know, maybe 25%? What about 35%? I'll be aggressive on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
To make it worth your while.
So do you think that there's an opportunity for somebody who's listening to us right now to say, you know what, I'm connected to a bunch of people. I'd be happy to just make some personal phone calls. Maybe I get one customer, but that could be meaningful right now. That could be a side hustle for somebody who's listening.
I mean, one, you know, commission check on a reasonable, you know, sized order can be easily $5,000. And, I mean, so yeah, if you're looking for an extra $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, maybe even more, if you're talking to government or hospitals or stuff like that, it's an easy side hustle, connecting dots and let me do the work as far as the sales side, just, you know, make the introduction. So I think it's definitely
that.
Anybody that has relationships on the supply side or the sales side, you know, I'd love to hear from, because we're always looking at, you know, where's inventory and you know, what different products can we offer, that type of thing, and then always looking at investing our prices and improving on that front, and then obviously we need, you know, the more prospects the better.
So you know what, I've already pointed out some of the flaws in the site. It's obviously a quick website they put together on Wix.
Yeah, it's
I think
Wix.
Right,
yeah,
I'm not putting it down. I've just pointed
no
some
that's
of it out.
You can put
but
it down.
Here's the thing that stands out for me. Where you did spend a lot of energy is telling people you're not making much money. Like for all the things that you didn't do to the site, the one thing that you seem to have gone out of your way to do is to say, look, my margins are really small. I'm donating a big part of this money. I'm wondering if maybe you were feeling a little more guilt than I realized. Maybe you felt there's an opportunity here to help, but I don't want to be judged. I'm going to head this off at the pass by saying I'm not making much money and I'm donating a bunch of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the 15% donation, for example, of profits, I don't think it affects buyers and their propensity to work with me at all. I don't think it's affected a single deal that I've done. But for me, it's a personal thing. It's where I know that, okay, my mission in this is not only to connect buyers and sellers, but it's deeper. It's providing a solution. It's helping people stay safe, stay healthy. And I want to be able to, you know, contribute the donations and give masks to frontline healthcare workers to, you know, be able to have that component of it that feels like the nonprofit component. Cause I love these nonprofits that are giving away masks for free and are doing those types of activities. So if I could bring that into what I'm doing, I just felt like it would be a stronger business overall. And I would feel, you know, better about it. And I don't think it was coming from necessarily guilt, more just, you know, ethics. What is the right margin? What is the right, markup on a product? What is, you know, the best way to handle that and what's not? And I think in the marketplace, you know, again, there's a lot of negative press and price gouging and all that stuff that's happening. And I don't want to be guilty of any of that. I want, and I'm transparent as well in the sense that, you know, a lot of my customers, I mean, they even might know my, you know, my buy price, what I'm getting it for and what I'm selling it to them for. I mean, I don't hide it. If they ask, we'll have a conversation about it because I'm not afraid of, you know, I'm trying to, you know, triple your price or whatever it is. Make a quick buck.
If you look at me, this was not at all planted or intentional. I'm wearing, it's a buff. This is my favorite type of face mask, even though it's too thin, but I'm not coming into contact with people. So it's minor, but it's okay. But I love it. This is the thing that I wore when I was running in Chile in the super windy weather, doing a marathon there on Antarctica. I wore this thing around my neck because then I could turn it into earmuffs. I could put it in, turn it into a hat. And I've been using it over COVID as my face mask. You're selling something like that.
Yeah.
I just love the look of those. Are they actually good protection?
Yeah, I mean, they all vary, and I try to stay away from you know, medical advice and be careful with that. But I mean, they really vary as far as kind of the cloth and bandana up to the three ply, you know, where you get more of the, I think it's, you know, 40 to 80%, and then K95s, you know, 80% plus, then N95s. You know, you have all these different layers of protection. And most of my, you know, customers, they want the 3M N95s, and we have a relationship with a 3M distributor, and not a lot of people do. And that's been a big asset. But the thing is, with 3M, to get that mask, because it's in so much demand, there's no guaranteed lead time or ship date. If you place an order, it could be months, it could be years before you actually get your mask.
And then are you charged now? Or you charge whenever it comes in?
You charge now, or there could be flexibility on the payment depending on order size. But if it's a smaller order, you have to pay up front. And 3M prioritizes the order and ships it out. You know, they're going to prioritize frontline healthcare workers, that type of thing. But that's what's driving the demand for, you know, KN95s, you know, really are the go-to for a lot of places. If 3-ply isn't enough, KN95s are really where it is. And that got a little more complicated. And that's where I got to kind of always, you know, keep abreast of what's happening in the industry, because K95s, you know, with FDA, they pulled the FDA approval from a bunch of factories in China.
I thought N95 is the one that everyone is looking for, but we're trying
N95
to give out
is the
to...
one they're looking for. KN95 is a little less protection than the N95, and most of K95s are made in China.
KN95s are made in China, and we can't get them right now. You're saying those also have long lead times.
Those we can get. We can get the ones that are Appendix A, you know, FDA, and the ones that are not non-medical, but still sufficient for, you know, most people for what they need. And those usually run, you know, depending on quantity, around $3 a pop. And then you have 3-ply, which are more, you know, $1.10, $1.25 a pop, you know, for that protection. But yeah, that's usually the three types of masks is going to be a 3M N95, a KN95, or the 3-ply.
This is I get it. this is some kind of business for you to get into now. Are you enjoying going in and understanding all this stuff?
I love it. Yeah, I love it. I mean, first of all, the sales component of this, I mean, I used to gamble. I was never a big gambler, but I used to, you know, play in poker tournaments and, you know, 130 grand playing Baccarat and, you know, won some money playing cards and just love the thrill of it. And just, you know, you're focused. And I feel kind of the same way oftentimes with this business where I'm doing all these deals and talking to these people via text, and it's a lot of fun and it's a lot of numbers. I have to be careful because I move really quickly and do things really quickly. And, you know, I had one order where the customer ordered, it was for hand sanitizer, and they literally wired like $87,000. And I messed up the numbers. It should have been like $120,000. $87,000 was, you know, basically my my cost on the order, and plus shipping and everything. So I went to them and I offered, you know, to go in half to pay to, you know, to get the right amount for the truckload of hand sanitizer and some solutions, but ultimately they didn't want to do it and it was just too much, and lost the sale, you know. And I could have not been in that situation if you know, I just basically added correctly and taken a little more time during that process. So that's an area where, you know, what I'd like to do soon is hire somebody to help me with just managing orders and managing the books and you know, some of these areas where you know, I'm moving so quick doing calls and everything. I think I just need to stay focused on the sales side and stay away from some of the operations.
All right, let me talk about my second sponsor. And then I've got to tell you that I considered here as we're talking, going, maybe I should be contacting my past guests. They run companies. They need to get back in business. But there's something keeps coming to my mind. But first, I'll tell you about TopTal. Do you know about TopTal, the company to go and hire developers from?
I do, yes.
You do? Have you used them at all? Do you know, do you have any experience with them?
I don't have a personal experience, but I've heard good things about them.
Here's the thing. I got to go back and find in my old interview transcripts, I would talk about them with guests. They would say, I have a lot of positive, like I've had friends tell me about how good they are. I have positive impression of how good TopTal is, but I could never hire somebody who doesn't work in the office. Like that was the big challenge. Why would you hire someone from TopTal if they're not going to come in the office? Now companies are realizing, you know, you don't have to have someone come in the office.
Yeah, not so much anymore.
Work from home. Right. Yeah. It's an advantage if you have somebody who's built to work from home better than to work from the office. And that's what's happening with TopTal. They, yes, still have the best of the best developers. We're talking about top 3%. They test them so hard that people who fail are sometimes proud of how far they've come in the development tests that TopTal puts them through. And they'll go and do posts on Medium. They'll talk about it. But in addition to that, now you've got people who are not just that good, but also that good at working remotely. And as an extra benefit, I remember talking to Noah Kagan when this thing first started happening, this whole COVID recession. And I thought, this is a guy who all he's doing in this interview is telling me about how he's cutting costs. And you know me, I'm comfortable. If you tell me as a guest of mine, Robbie, that you're not crazy for a podcast, even though my sponsor is a podcast, I'm not looking to censor you. I want you to be yourself. And so I went into the ad for TopTal with Noah Kagan, expecting him to say, you should cut everything. Don't pay for Netflix. Don't pay for your SaaS software. Cut expenses at your company. And then me talking about TopTal, I expect him to say, and don't hire from TopTal. You should hire people who are less good for less money. But he said, you know what, Andrew? This is like using Amazon Web Services where you need a server, you need more bandwidth, you need more something. You just go to them and they give you the capability. He said the same thing with TopTal. You need to grow your developers, go to TopTal, you hire from them. And then when you need to scale down, you just cancel with TopTal. It makes it much easier than if, as he pointed out, if you have a full-time employee who's on your books, who you have to then pay for on the way in and pay for on the way out. With TopTal, you can hire quickly, you can hire the best, and then they make it easy for you both to scale up and scale down. All you have to do is go to, if you're hiring developers, go to top is in top of your head, talisandtalent.com/mixergy. When you go there, they will give you 80 hours of TopTal developer credit for free. Really, 80 hours for free when you pay for your first 80 hours. That's amazing, isn't it, Robbie?
That's amazing. Yeah, no, I like the model. We have a directory and another company agency match that's vetted and vouched for agencies that we take through an agency review process. Not as robust as TopTal's testing and what they do, but I love that model of, you know, top 1%, 2%, 3%, 5%, whatever it is of talent and you know, providing access to it. Because again, you know, people if they're looking to hire, they're not just looking for the best developer. They're looking for the least amount of risk in working with that developer, and that's what these platforms do, is they minimize that risk.
And they minimize it with TopTal by doing the testing. And by the way, when you put tests together that are really hard, people want to just see if they could pass the test. They want to talk about their experience with it. So that's kind of marketing too. But they minimize it that way. But in addition to the 80 hours for free that I mentioned a moment ago, they will also give anyone who's listening to me and uses my URL 2 weeks to try out their developers. If you're not happy, you do not have to pay. Get details by going to toptal.com/mixergy. Let me spell it out for you. It's toptal.com/mixergy. toptal.com/mixergy. And I always tell my guests, I'm not looking to censor you. If you don't like my sponsor, if you've had bad experiences, talk about it. God knows I've talked about some of the negatives with my sponsors, which means that when you're listening, yeah, sometimes you'll get some bad information. Some people telling you don't use the sponsor, or I don't like them for whatever reason. That's totally fine with me. I'm not looking to pretend that everything is great. But you'll also see that when guests are talking about my sponsors in a positive light, it's also coming from the same position of honesty and openness. All right. Here's the thing that I'm feeling. I am really in my head going, well, this is your opportunity, Andrew. You can undo the problem that you've had. You running 5 miles through San Francisco streets, regretting not moving faster when COVID happened, not actually recognizing that your audience has an issue with this and doing interviews about it. You should just reach out to Pascast, say, hey, if you're opening up and you need any masks, any gel, anything, even a conversation about what you should get, one of the guests that I've interviewed for years is available. One of the best guests. I was going to say, like, one of the best people to talk to is a past guest. But you were really damn good. I'll tell you what your dad said in a moment after our first interview. But I'm still feeling a sense of guilt and something. Help me get out of my sense of shame and hesitation here.
Essentially, Liquid Web, for example, you know, we talked about them in the beginning. You know, they have a need to protect their employees, and this is a space where they don't have relationships, you know, is set up, and when it comes to medical supplies, so they don't necessarily know where to go, who to turn to, and they're looking at a lot of different options. You know, they're just trying to see who's available, what's available. They're scared. They're skeptical. They've seen negative press. You know, whatever it is, it's the wild, wild west. I mean, it really is. And I think in that atmosphere, you know, that's why there's a need for, you know, the person that can, you know, really hold your hand through the process and be candid with you and be frank with you about, you know, what your options are and navigates through the process to get a successful outcome. And I think that that's where, you know, that's not, there are people that are jumping on to make a bunch of money off of a big mask order, but they're not investing of themselves when it comes to, you know, really learning the product, believing in the product, believing in, you know, why we're selling the product. I mean, all of those things. And that all makes a difference because, you know, with any kind of sales, I mean, passion really matters. But, you know, this especially when I'm talking with a medical practice or a hospital that's, you know, looking at a big order and talking to me about, you know, the products that I have to offer, you know, they're coming from a place of skepticism. They're coming from a place of, you know, fear. And it's my job to, you know, alleviate that through information and through facts and through, you know, being transparent during the process.
So what you're saying is, Andrew, they have a need. They don't know anyone. Quit focusing on everything and everything that's tertiary.
Yeah, I mean, if I can solve their need, if I can make them a happy camper by solving their need, giving them a great price, giving them great service, getting that they get the product within a few days. I mean, that level of service that you're not seeing in the industry right now, then it's helping them, and it's helping them more quickly protect their employees, and it's helping because it results in a donation to frontline healthcare workers. It helps my family. I can funnel that into my other businesses, which helps those businesses and those customers. I mean, it has it's a win-win situation for everybody. The only time it's not a win-win is, you know, if I get into a deal where, you know, I'm over my head and I'm saying, oh yeah, I've got 700,000 masks and maybe I don't. And I stay away from that because there's too much risk. You know, these orders are too big to screw up on.
I remember the first interview that we did, like I said, 2009. This was back on Skype. So your dad so
this
found
is back
me
when
Skype.
I was, how old was I in 2009? That was, what, where are we? 2020, 11. So it was, yeah, I was like 23, I think.
And by then you already had, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of experience. Like you were starting to build
company.
Websites at 14, weren't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
And what were you doing? You were doing the Where to Get Engaged blog. You were doing, Los Angeles Digital Directory. What was the Los Angeles Digital Directory? It's gone now.
Yeah, that was my kind of first attempt at the directory model. Now we have Agency Match that we launched last July, my partners and I. But that was my first attempt at a directory, editor-moderated tech directory for Los Angeles that I spent about $30,000-$40,000 on and built up some listings and traction. And I licensed it out to a couple other places, but end up going through some stuff and never ended up.
You're thinking, look, at people's those moments where big changes happen in their lives or in their businesses, they're willing to look at new options and they'll go hunt them down. And that's where you wanted to be. So at a moment where someone wanted to get engaged, they didn't have established experiences buying engagement rings. They'd look online, they'd be open. And if they found your directory, they might go to your directory. That was the model, right?
Yeah, and that specifically was targeting the male, the guy in the relationship instead of the female with, you know, there's the knot and a lot of bridal sites.
Right.
But we went after the ring and the proposal first and then built out the rest of the process as far as planning
that,
your wedding
that one
and
worked.
So on.
Why
it worked. It worked. What happened was it worked for a couple of years. There's a partner with it that was offered a good chunk of money from a large jewelry manufacturer. And then he had a lot of difficulties from the recession and ended up going under, basically. And the business was shut down within a couple of years. It just was turned off.
What was Moon Berthium? That was you and your buddy doing SEO?
That was me and my buddy doing SEO. Yeah.
Okay. It's a bunch of businesses, but the one that's lasted the longest is Bull and Beard. And the idea there was you were the bull, the young guy who had all this energy, and you partnered up with someone who was like the beard, the older, more experienced person, right?
Yeah. So, well, Epsilon Concepts, Ecliptics changed the name and I think year eight, that was 10 years. And then, worked for a few agencies, did some consulting and then have had Bull and Beard since 2013 and then Agency Match since last year. And yeah, my partner is, Jason on, Bull and Beard and Agency Match, with Sasha on Agency Match as well. And Sasha is Jason is definitely the beard, literally and metaphorically, but, you know, kind of the older, wiser and I'm more the bull in the China shop, but now I'm getting old and, you know, 309 and all that good stuff too. So,
I get the sense that you're looking for that longer term, more established business that Bull and Beard almost is there, but it's still more like huge. It's still more of a consulting company that doesn't survive you, right? You're looking for that business.
Yeah,
that will.
My plan is really more focused on Agency Match. Very focused on Agency Match. Yeah. A directory of 1,000 agencies. You know, they pay $100 a month, so it's about $1 million annual revenue stream plus setup fees of $550 for the review and editorialized profile, and we could scale that up too. So that's a really solid model that I really believe in, and we've had a lot of success with. We have over 250 agencies on board.
Kind of
so
going
far.
Back to the old Epsilon days where you were creating directories.
Yeah, creating them. It's more that platform, that product, and it's driven. You know, it's driven 160K in the last 9 months since starting it. So I'm pretty happy with this performance. You know,
160K
so far.
To you or 160K in business overall.
In business overall.
The challenge with that is they're going to make their connection and then going to cut you out and move on, right?
Yeah, that's where it's the membership model. So it's the combination of the hybrid, you know, Bull and Beard matchmaking with commission or use the directory of vetted agencies and identify your own agencies. And then I think, you know, I have a longer term vision with Berthium & Co. as well, you know, where we kind of, you know, label ourselves as purveyors of hard to find items. So I'd love to, you know, continue to meet the medical, you know, supply demand that's going to be present for many months, if not years. I'd like to meet that, but also diversify into some other areas such as, you know, corporate gifting and personalized gifts, other areas in the same space, not medical supplies, but in the same, you know, brokering of products,
right.
And expand into that and figure out what that is. What are the harder to find areas when it comes to merchandise?
So what your dad did, he found me on Skype, and then he told me how proud he was of you. Like, you were a 14-year-old kid building your businesses. And I feel like at that moment, he listened to your interview, and I think we did it live, or maybe he heard it afterwards. But we might have done it live back then. But I feel like it was his moment to just say, ah, you know what? This is just kind of slowly developed. My kid was always like this. And I don't remember a day where I took a moment to just stand back and say, this is far that he's come. Was he always like that? Was he growing up the kind of person who'd take that time out? Or was that a unique moment for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a unique moment for me. I mean, I think it was interesting growing up because I started Epsilon Concepts, my agency, you know, when I was 14, about the same time that he started Berthoum Software. He's a software developer. And so, you know, I think he would agree that, you know, there was some competition between us as far as our
really?
Businesses. And yeah, and I felt a lot of that, and I felt like it was kind of wrong because, you know, you're my dad and you're supposed to be proud of me, and I just want you to be proud of me, and I don't want to compete. But I did, you know, my dad's also a younger dad. He had me when he was 20. And so when I was 14, he was only 34, you know, he still wasn't really that old of a dad.
About as old as you are.
So I think, you know, we had that kind of relationship, that like best friend relationship. And my company took off and did a lot better, frankly, than his company did. And you know, I think that created some feelings of, you know, oh, maybe you're not helping us enough, or you don't care about us anymore, or you're just doing your thing, you know, whatever. Just this,
from him thinking you don't care
him.
Enough about the family.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then me feeling like, you know, well, I don't, you know, I haven't, I'm not getting that validation. And I used to get really kind of hurt, upset about it. I'm sure he was upset about, you know, how cocky and egotistical I was, and, you know, independent and everything. And then something happened where I don't know, he matured and I matured, and you know, he sent me cards on multiple occasions that he was proud of me and just, you know, my family. And especially after I had my kids, you know, that's when he really started to be just vocal about, you know, I'm just proud of what you're doing. And that means a lot. I mean, I'm a words of affirmation, love language, you know, kind of guy. So I need to hear it. And I've always heard it from my mom, but never quite so much from my dad. And even with this whole Berthoum & Co., you know, I think my family certainly, you know, they're probably will listen to this, but, you know, I think there was definitely some judgment, you know, on their part, that they didn't release to me, but I know there was judgment there as far as like, oh, he's just trying to make more money, or, you know, opportunist kind of thing, like without them saying it. Like a relative posted an article that was kind of a smack in the face to what I'm doing, you know, for example, and it's just kind of like a subtle, like, why'd you post that?
Yeah.
But I didn't take it personally because, you know, I don't need them to be convinced of my motives. I mean, I know what my motives are. I know what I'm doing in the marketplace. And, you know, frankly, if I succeed and make a lot of money from the effort, then, you know, I'm only going to help my family anyways. So it's been less of an issue. And the ones that hated, you know, on the masks and stuff have asked me to send them masks now that, you know, I have the image. They're like,
great.
Send me a mask, please, you know, when it's going to be an update. But so it's good. I definitely feel like, you know, again, getting that validation, if you're an entrepreneur, you know, definitely, you know, you don't get a lot of validation because, you know, you're the one out front charging. And
I feel like it's easy for
people
to be critical. And it's easy to be critical. It's a lot harder to do something. I remember interviewing the founder of 99 Designs. I've known Matt Mitzkowitz by then for a while. And he said, everyone's criticizing this model of you come on and you say the model of businesses saying, I want to hire designers creating something as a way of pitching their work and then getting paid only if they get selected. And I said, here's one person, Andrew Hyde, really very critical of you too. Actually, yeah, he said, Andrew Hyde is critical. I said to him, he said, I actually respect Andrew Hyde. I said, really? Why? He goes, I said, everyone's just so critical. Andrew Hyde built something that was an alternative to mine. It's really hard to create something. The fact that he didn't just pound away a criticism, but said there's a problem here and I'm going to create something that's an alternative. I'd show a lot of respect there. And I think that's a really good way to think about the world. I think about that a lot. It's much easier to be critical. It's a lot harder to say, you know what? If that's not the right way, let me come up with a better way. All right. So yeah. We'll end it with this. I now walk around with my little hand sanitizer. Remember, I told you I started out being critical in my head, not publicly. In my head, thinking, oh, this guy is not whatever. He's creating this hand sanitizer. I couldn't find Purell. I felt anxious about it. My kids felt anxious about it. Got this thing. I don't know who this company is, but I am so grateful to them for having said, I'm going to get in the hand sanitizer business early. I bought this and I keep it in my pocket now all the time. And so we're all critical and
particularly
until we
need. Particularly with hand sanitizers, oftentimes, you know, you are helping if you purchase hand sanitizer, you're helping a company that's pivoted from something else, and you're keeping them alive with that hand sanitizer purchase, whether it's a brewery, whether it's an e-cig, you know, a vape manufacturer.
Hey, dude, I'm not doing this out of the kindness of my heart for them. I'm doing this for myself. I care about myself, right? This is like self-interest. This is me saying, I am so glad that somebody else, for whatever reason, whether it was self-interest or altruism, whatever it was, I'm so glad somebody else had the presence of mind out there to say, I'm going to create hand sanitizer at a time when the rest of the world either said, we can't create it, or I can't believe Purell can't keep up with demand, or someone else said, I can't believe that these people are going to profit here. Whoever created this hand sanitizer that I got in my hand right here, I don't know who they are. All I could tell is that they were in Chicago, Illinois. I will say this. They didn't think like that. Instead, they thought, let's create this. There's a need out there. We're going to satisfy it. If you're listening to me, we are entrepreneurs. We have to keep thinking, what is the big pain? What is the big need? We have to charge ahead and create something for it.
And on that note, I agree. And I think, you know, that's the biggest thing that I've observed is, you know, how ridiculous it is how much we rely on China for anything medical, for anything in this space. And entrepreneurs, you know, it's up to us to step up to the plate and start making masks, start making gowns, start making face shields, start making infrared thermometers, start get creative and create solutions.
I have seen people do this. One of my past guests said, look, I have a printing company. Nobody needs anything printed right now. We were just basically shut down. And he said, look at what we did instead. He takes the plastic that I guess they use in some of their signs and he's making face shields for businesses and first responders. And it's just amazing. And I had to say to him, I'm sorry, I can't have you on as a guest because it's just, I'm actually getting pitched now because I'm asking for it by a lot of entrepreneurs who are doing well right now. And his story was not directly related to what I'm trying to do, but I have to say, he's gotten creative. He's now manufacturing face masks in the US, or maybe it's Canada. Both countries have really fallen behind when it comes to manufacturing. And what I've noticed now with COVID-19 is people in the US, people in Canada, people in other countries are realizing, hey, you know what? We actually can create this. And they are out there creating.
Now, my friend and supplier, Rob, from Social Distancing Decals, he makes those and manufactures them. And he came up with all these great designs and is doing these different, you know, themes. And he's been in a lot of the local news lately getting press. And he started, probably a few weeks after I did, but really recent entrant and, you know, out with a shiny site. And I mean, amazing the success that he's having. And it's great to see because it's like, okay, great. It's also US based because I will say that buyers, you know, will pay a premium if it's in the US and if it's made, you know, in America, they will definitely pay a premium for that product. So I think, there's definitely a lot of, manufacturing companies that could really step up. And, you know, I think COVID is not going away, you know, the end of this year. I mean, it's probably going to be the end of next year, if that, until it's really, you know, not the problem that it is. I mean, it's going to be winding down a bit, but it's going to be around for a long time. So the issue of medical supplies and demand is not going anywhere. So that's where, you know, I think, there's time if you jump on it right now, still to take advantage of the opportunities and, you know, provide a valuable product or service in the marketplace.
I was trying to think, how do I tell people to go to your website? I feel like Berthume might be intimidating to type out or to spell, but it's not that hard. You know why? Because anyone who's listening to us will see in the show notes how to spell your last name. The website is Berthume and full word, berthumeandco.com. And I want to thank two sponsors who made this interview happen. The first, if you're hiring developers, really now is the time to go to toptal.com/mixergy, hire right, and give yourself the flexibility you need to build your business. toptal.com/mixergy. And number two, now that this interview is over, go check out Traffic Secrets in whatever podcast app you're listening to me. It will be there. Look at the ratings. It's not just me because they're paying me for the sponsorship saying it. It's me because I'm a fan. I've read the books and It's everyone else who's in the podcast app rating them highly because it's such a good podcast. It is called Traffic Secrets, and I'm grateful to them for sponsoring. And Robbie, thanks so much for being in here, and I really appreciate the communication we've had over the years. I just I've liked following along and seeing how you're doing.
Yeah, it's been a blast. I look forward to talking when I'm 40 and seeing,
oh, you will.
Seeing
and
what's
when you're
happening
80,
then. Yeah.
Do this till I die.
Yeah.
Just pound it on the table. All right. Thanks. Bye, Robbie.
All right. Thanks, Andrew. Yeah.